Just a few years after Twitter and Facebook were celebrated for sparking democratic movements around the world, repressive regimes have found a way to use social media as a way to control people and information, and suppress opposition. In an article for Bloomberg Businessweek titled "A Global Guide to State-Sponsored Trolling," journalist Michael Riley, Lauren Etter, and Rupa Paradon look at how countries including Turkey, Venezuela, Ecuador, South Korea, China, and the Philippines have used social media to create virtual hate mobs, spread misinformation, anonymous threats, and target opposition without leaving a trace. You can find A Global Guide to State-Sponsored Trolling online at Bloomberg.com. One of the co-authors, Michael Riley, joins us now to discuss it. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much.
So what is it that makes Twitter and Facebook such great platforms for spreading government propaganda?
Well, I think it's the ability to scale it and to interfere anonymously, and to also just create mechanisms to control narratives, political narratives, and at scale and from a distance that makes it unique. I mean, we all know that propaganda it's been used since the beginning of politics, but one of the things that's changed dramatically in the last 10 years is that the way that people get news, the way they understand the world, is increasingly controlled by social media. Facebook and Twitter being and things like YouTube being, you know, some of the main platforms. And because those platforms, I was talking to somebody who used to be do this as part of the military and do their psychological operations unit. And he's like, you know, Facebook is the best friend that we now have. It's like we can create identities that are really elaborate and dip into conversations and start narratives in ways that we could never have done before. And he was like talking about the history of propaganda and the way that there used to be, the CIA used to pack airplanes full of radio equipment and fly them over countries so that they could create instant radio stations. But social media basically allows you to do that so much more easily and so much more cheaply.
Wow. So before we get into any sort of self-reflection on our own country, I want you to give us an understanding of how other governments are able to use these social media platforms to exert power over citizens.
Yeah, one of the things that we sort of learned is both that governments all over the world have realized that this is a super powerful tool. So the just sheer scope of it was really interesting to us. It's like, I think, you know, we found on our map that we built, there are almost 20 countries, and that's not even a complete sample of it. But essentially what governments are doing is, the strategy works on two levels. They're trying to control political narratives and create sort of misinformation and counterinformation. And they do that by using both Twitter and Facebook. They create what seem to be real people or real sources of information, but really aren't. And then they can sort of shape narratives at scale. But they're also, one of the other things that often gets lost in this discussion is that they're creating sort of weapons of suppression and oppression in certain ways, because you can create essentially virtual hate mobs. These are like swarms of Twitter users or Facebook users who literally just throw vitriol and hate and threats and just some of the really, really vile stuff at journalists, at human rights activists, at political opponents, that both means that those opponents feel threatened in a very direct way, but also spend a lot of their time and effort trying to like understand and fight off those threats. It's a little like a virtual version of, you know, sending the guys with the bats after your opponents, except now you don't have to, you know, you don't have to have the guy and you don't have to have the bats. You could just do it all online.
So some people might say, well, but you know what? It's, you know, sticks and stones. These are just people who are just saying things in, you know, the Twitter ether, and don't take it personally and you won't be hurt. But you actually lay out some examples where that's not the case.
Yeah, and in fact, it's not one-dimensional in the sense that they don't only stick to social media, which makes it all that more threatening. So in fact, they do combine real-world activity with social media activity. So for example, one example in Azerbaijan was an investigative reporter who was secretly videotaped having sex with her boyfriend in her house. And that videotape was then leaked online, and then a troll army effectively was used to kind of spread that as a kind of form of both intimidation and an effort to discredit them. And it starts with an actual activity where you had to have somebody break in the house. So it does work in both a physical and digital world where they kind of reinforce one another. But it's also, you know, one of the things we found is that the worst and most vitriolic attacks were against women journalists, women opponents. And there's a lot of very sort of misogynistic language. There's a lot of like rape threats. There's a lot of, and because you don't really know if these are real people or not real people, it takes a psychological toll on you know, you as an activist and you as a journalist. So in some cases, journalists, because it was so relentless and so ugly, would end up like picking up and leaving the country or stopping their work. Or in the case of Turkey, for example, the campaign was persistent enough and includes things like using spyware and other elements that it really has shut down kind of Twitter and social media generally as a form, like a forum for organization, like popular organization. It's basically, and that was kind of the point of the strategy.
Well, also, when you talk about spyware, and we, of course, should mention also the bot armies that seem to be popping up. Can you break down which countries have been the most effective at using bots, and also how do they work?
Yeah, it's some of them have been super aggressive, and the tactics change a little bit. But so Turkey, as I just said, has been an example of a country that's used it really aggressively. So they've combined things like spreading. They've created fake websites that in one case that we cite in a story that was built around an actual march, a protest march that was going to occur, and so it looked like it was a website that was used by the organizers, and then people would go. So these fake Twitter accounts would send around information and the link to the website, and so actual marchers would click on those links, and then spyware would be downloaded onto their computers, so that would both track their information, steal their emails. So you combine kind of spying with this kind of social manipulation. So that's kind of one version of the model. But then there are other versions in Venezuela, for example. The Venezuelan government has been very open about the fact that it sees the digital conversation as a major battlefield, and that they are going to build up a bot army or a social media army that sometimes includes bots, but also includes real people. So they would create these kiosks in town squares, and you would sign. You would come to these kiosks if you were a Maduro supporter, and they would create a Twitter account for you and an Instagram account for you, and then they would use coordination channels on apps like Telegram to tell you these are the targets you should be attacking, these are the things you should be saying.
Wow.
And you would participate in this kind of like, so effectively they're humans, but it's a highly coordinated social media attacks. And they're sort of very open about like the fact that they're doing it and spending government money on it. One of the things that we post along with the article is a slide deck where the Venezuelan government is talking about how it's going to build its troll army.
Well, what about in Mexico? Because you also mentioned something called Pentabots.
Yeah, Mexico is also one of the countries where the landscape is just a sort of a kind of a dystopian political future. What this might look like. Mexico is a good example because they're like the social media bots and manipulated accounts are so active and so persistent there that the opposition to the outgoing president sort of nicknamed them Peñabots after the outgoing president. And it was just a recognition that a lot of what's being talked about on social media is contrived and created by the government, and they have a lot of infrastructure. And that also, Mexico is also one of those examples where they use different variations of this. So one of the examples in Mexico is investigative reporter in Mexico had basically uncovered these groups that look a little like sort of alt-right trolls in the U.S., but they're effectively youth, and not all of them are Mexican, but they're all over Latin America, and And they are so basically spend a lot of time attacking political opponents and journalists, people who whose agendas oppose the agenda of the government. And they're sort of like, you can think of them as like gangs, like sort of loosely organized gangs of youth whose main weapon is their computer and their social media accounts. It's not really, you know, guys in the streets. It's people who are sitting, you know, on their, in front of a keyboard all day and just creating this kind of relentless attack mechanism that the government can point wherever it wants to and use it. And in the case of that investigative journalist, because he was writing about these groups, these gangs, he became a target of them and eventually fled to Costa Rica for a few months to try and let the temperature slow down a little bit.
I'm speaking with Michael Riley about his article for Bloomberg Businessweek, A Global Guide to State-Sponsored Trolling. Now, a lot of the things that you've been talking about, unfortunately, sound incredibly familiar, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention that the U.S. is on your list. Okay, so I wanted to pick up with my question about the fact that a lot of the things that you were talking about that were going on in other countries sound incredibly familiar, and in your article, the U.S. is on your list of countries that have figured out how to do state-sponsored trolling.
Yeah, the part of this article looks at two reports that think tanks had done, one associated with Google and one institute associated with a think tank in California called the Institute for the Future. And the Institute for the Future, one of the reasons we put the U.S. on the list is the Institute for the Future sort of determined a lot of the activity that they saw and were able to document from 2016 looked a lot like this behavior, but they were careful to say that there are different categories of it. So some of it looks like just straight up like state-sponsored hate mobs. And they called, this category, the U.S., is more something more like state leverage. So it was the state using or sort of benefiting and encouraging this kind of behavior. And it doesn't, I mean, anyone who looked at 2016 and the kind of Twitter sphere and Facebook activity around the 2016 election realizes that there was a lot of just vitriol and kind of organized mobs that use those platforms. And in fact, the alt-right trolls famously sort of did this as just part of their support of Trump.
Yeah, and I don't want us to relitigate 2016 again.
Sure.
But I do want to talk about some of the things that at least we're seeing now. For example, Twitter and Facebook are both trying to step up, and at least preliminary on some level, and make some changes to the way that they handle people who are determined to be trolls. And the biggest example right now is Alex Jones. He's been banned from several platforms and even got a suspension from Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're trying to do two things. One is they're trying to eliminate fake accounts or accounts that aren't who they don't represent a real person, or the person that they represent aren't who they say they are. And so Twitter, for example, is, you know, just a few weeks ago did a massive purge of literally millions of accounts. And so President Trump lost 7% of his followers. A lot of people on the right complained that their followers had dropped as part of this purge. But yeah, they're also, all the platforms are also trying to fight absolute misrepresentation or misinformation. And I think Alex Jones was the first shot over the bow. They're saying that basically, you know, Jones is trafficking in not even conspiracy theories, but just crazy stuff, like, you know, the things that are factually absolutely untrue, but yet still get a lot of traction among people who are his fans. And they're basically saying, we're not going to do that anymore. So, the bar has to be pretty high for somebody like that to be kicked off of those platforms. But I think Alex Jones, by any measure, sort of fit those criteria.
Well, he did only get a week-long suspension from Twitter, so not kicked off, and we do want to be clear about that. But how does that work with these platforms where their bread and butter is actually in the clicks, in the interaction, in you almost, they work off of outrage?
Yeah, and that's one of the tensions I think that we're seeing right now play out. It's like, not all companies are doing this in the same way. Facebook has taken a somewhat more aggressive approach to this. And in fact, Facebook is different in Twitter in a fundamental way. Facebook makes it harder to create an account anonymously. You have to associate it with a phone number. They really are trying to say if you create a Facebook account, you should be a real person. Whereas Twitter is like, quite honestly, they're like, you can create an anonymous account. That's not a problem on Twitter. And Twitter does have more motivation to keep the numbers growing because its model of making money is less robust than Facebook. So I think you've seen Twitter sort of less aggressive at shutting some of this stuff down and creating elements where where you have to like verify your identity. And there's just the kind of larger question that these platforms now face, which is what do they want to be both now and in the future? If they get a reputation as being tools of authoritarianism, of strongmen, then I think their health as companies is going to suffer because people are not going to want to participate on those platforms. And in fact, Twitter already has that kind of reputation now.
Well, one of the most controversial Twitter accounts is from our current commander-in-chief at The Real Donald Trump, his personal Twitter account. And a lot of people have suggested that he has engaged in abusive behavior on this platform. However, then we recently see the CEO of Twitter saying that because he's a head of state, people should be able to have unfiltered access to what it is that he's putting out there. So they're not going to suspend his account for calling a woman a dog or some of the other various things that people have found offensive.
I know it's an interesting argument, but it's also an interesting problem, right? It's the fact that in some ways the commander-in-chief uses language and does things on Twitter that might easily be interpreted as breaking its terms of service. How are we going to respond to that? He is the president of the United States, and basically Twitter made this argument that it's like he can't really break the terms of service. We have to like let people hear what he says because he runs the country.
Are there any dangers that you would see in terms of the way some trolling is done in the U.S. versus the way you were laying it out in other countries like Venezuela, et cetera, that might mirror or at least that America is starting to walk up to the line to getting closer to what happened in Turkey, for example?
You know, it's interesting that I think one of the differences with the U.S. is there seems to be still an effort where the government wants to be, to the extent that some countries are perfectly, like Venezuela, perfectly happy being associated with the manipulation of social media and a online, discursive war. In the U.S., the government doesn't want to be associated with that. And in fact, political parties don't want to be associated with that. But one result that researchers have talked about is that means that it doesn't mean that it's not going on. It means that it's far more hidden and far harder to trace. And so, for example, it's very difficult to spot coordinated manipulation of Twitter accounts through, say, a social media botnet. If you're not Twitter itself, it's very hard to sort of determine what's a real account versus not a real account. If the people who have created those accounts are sophisticated about doing it, and I think that's what's happening is they're just getting very, very sophisticated. So then the question becomes, well, what on Twitter or what on Facebook can we trust as authentic in the sense that the person who seems to be making a comment or saying something is actually the person they represent themselves to be? And that's a fundamental difficulty with social media now. We actually don't know how to make those distinguishing characteristics short of verified accounts or famous personalities. Is this person real or not? There's a whole discourse about, some people who are, say, they're conservative Twitter, part of the conservative Twitterati, who basically say, they're accused of being bots, but they're actually real people, and that's a violation of their free speech.
Why does it seem like there are so many nations that have developed similar trolling operations all at the same time? Is this a coincidence or is this something else?
It's interesting because it does seem one of the things that we found out as we were researching a lot of this stuff is a lot of this activity seems to start around the same time, around in 2014. And that's, if you remember the Mueller indictment about the Internet Research Agency, that's also when the Russia effort at manipulating the 2016 campaign began. It's when a lot of the activity in a lot of countries seems to start around the same time. And it raises this question. Was there some sort of back channel coordination by some of these countries was Russia, which was a kind of a leader on this stuff, exporting this technology as part of an effort to.
Okay, Michael, we got to leave it there, unfortunately. But listen, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm Jenna Flanagan, and I've been speaking with Michael Riley about his article for Bloomberg Businessweek, A Global Guide to State-Sponsored Trolling.